So I can, I think, begin the talk now. Because this is the final talk of this small retreat. During this retreat I have talked mostly about how to calm the mind down. And especially I want you to leave this resort understanding that samadhi is stillness. And the way to attain stillness is through this wonderful way of letting things be, letting things go. A very wonderful method which produces great results. Last night somebody made a very important question about the nature of right effort, because that can confuse people. When we make effort, you can observe in your mind that that stirs up the mind and moves you further away from stillness. And so the path has to be one of letting go of craving, letting go of wanting, just as described in the second factor of the Eightfold Path of Sammasankhapa, and just as described by the Third Noble Truth in the Four Ways of Letting Go. And that idea of renouncing, even loving kindness, maitri, is respecting things and loving them as they are, not wanting to change them. And this is where, as a monk, one learns the secret of meditation. I call it a secret, even though the Buddha said many, 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 many times what to do. Still, people find it difficult to let go. And you can understand from the teachings I've given why they find it difficult to let go. It's because it goes against the grain of the self. I always remember one of the great teachings of the Buddha. He says, where there is a self, there will be things which belong to a self. Where there are things which belong to a self, there you will find a self. It's as if these two always go together. The idea that you exist, and the idea of ownership. And the only way to stop that idea of ownership, attachment and clinging, is to see if you can abandon the sense of self. Many years ago, I was trying to think of a simile to express how we can let go. And I came up with the simile of a hand. Because I was just watching just how my hand works. My hand always picks up things. And I say, that's attachment, let it go, Ajahn Brahm. So I put it down. Then it'll pick up something else. Put it down. As soon as I put that one down, I pick up something else. My hand was always picking things up. And I realized no matter how much I tried to control my hand and say, don't pick things up, it would always pick things up. Because that's the nature of a hand. To grasp and pick things up. So I thought the only way that I can stop picking things up with my hand, there's only one way to do that, and that's cut my hand off. And once I've cut my hand off, then I won't pick up anything anymore. That's the only way. And what that simile meant was the only way to stop grasping, attaching and craving is to cut off the hand which grasps the idea of a me, a self. That's the only way. To abandon the sense of self, only then will you let go of craving. The letting go we do before we've abandoned the sense of self is only a temporary letting go. It's a letting go which is good enough to take you into jhanas and give you a taste of freedom, vimutti rasa. But the real letting go can only be done when you've actually seen there's no self in there, there's no one in here at all. And therefore, you don't have to pick things up anymore. Now, I mentioned to Venerable Panasiri when we were talking, I think at lunch or tea or somewhere. Now, he asked me about my knowledge of the suttas and what my teachings are based on. And it was the case in the forest monasteries of Thailand when I first became a monk. There were hardly any copies of the suttas to be found. And what they were locked in a cabinet. And we didn't have the key, we would worship them, but never read them. And so that I was left very much to my own devices. And what I had learned about Buddhism as a layperson. But I did have a foundation because for many years I was a layperson, a Buddhist, a very practicing devout Buddhist before I became a monk. So at least I had a foundation. And also I had a great opportunity to practice meditation, which is what the forest monasteries in Thailand were very strong at. So I learned my meditation and got great insights. And it was only later that I decided to look at the suttas, especially the ones who were in Pali. You know, I mentioned the Venerable Panya's theory. There was a French monk who was a friend of mine, and he came to Sri Lanka, one of the first of our Thai forest monks to come to Sri Lanka. And when the other monks and the lay people asked him, "Do you know Pali?" And he said no, he didn't know Pali. He said they laughed at him, because the idea of a bhikkhu who doesn't know Pali was just ridiculous. That was in those days anyway. He's a senior bhikkhu. So when he came back and he told me that, I thought, well, I've got a good mind, and I can sort of, went to university, I can learn Pali, so I learned Pali. When I learned Pali, you know, enough to read the suttas, you know, in Pali and the Vinaya, then you can imagine sort of my shock when I came across the sutta in the Sanyutta Nikaya, the simile of the hand, where the Buddha said, if you have a hand, you'll always grasp things. The only way to stop grasping is to cut off the hand. I thought that was my simile. Because it came to me before I read the suttas. And there it was, straight in the suttas. And that, ooh, that's very spooky. But it was a wonderful simile. Because it showed me just the only way you really, really, really let go is to abandon the sense of self. So all this idea of letting go of craving, letting go of ill will, if you try to do that now, before you are so one, it's good restraint, but you will always fail. That is why it's so hard living a life as a monk. If you see a beautiful girl, you will be attracted. If someone upsets you, you will get angry. You can't stop that. Not just by suppression or even restraint. Restraint limits it. But to stop it, you have to be so one first. And to be a so one, in other words, to see non-self, to see there's nothing in there, to see that is one of the hardest things for a human being to do. Which is why we have to follow this beautiful Eightfold Path. To, for monks like me, to convince you, to brainwash you, to let go, just to see what it's like. Temporarily, to let go of your hand, to let go of the controller. Now that is hard work. That is what Samawayama means. It's not striving, struggling, exerting your will, but going in the opposite direction, against the stream of craving. It's a powerful word, against the stream of craving. It means you stand still, you stop. Remember the great story of Angulimala, where the Buddha was walking down the road, and Angulimala was running after him, could never catch him. And then would ask the Buddha, sort of, stop monk, stop monk. And the Buddha turned around and said, I have stopped, you stop. And of course most people realize or think that that just means stop breaking your precepts. But it's much more profound than that. It means stop craving, stop will, stop. And see what happens. One of the great similes, which this is an original Ajahn Brahm simile, I still haven't found it in the suttas, was the simile of the donkey and the carrot. It shows how enlightenment happens and why you may be practicing hard, diligently for year after year after year after year, and you're still not enlightened. Many of you may know donkeys. They are known as the most stubborn creature in the world. That's why in English we have the word as stubborn as a donkey. Even if you get a stick and hit the donkey, it still won't obey your orders. That's how stubborn it is. But wise people know how to make use of a donkey. Instead of hitting the donkey with the stick, you tie the stick to the donkey's back. So the front of the stick is about 2 foot in front of the donkey's head. On the end of that stick you tie a string. On the end of the string you tie a carrot, because donkeys like carrots. And so the donkey sees the carrot 2 foot in front of him, and the donkey likes carrots, so the donkey moves towards the carrot. But because the carrot is on the end of a string, which is on the end of a stick, which is tied to the donkey's back, when the donkey moves, so does the carrot move. And even if the donkey runs, the carrot is always around 2 feet in front of his mouth. So he keeps running, 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 still never catches a carrot, but the owner of the donkey gets the donkey by that method to pull the cart with laden with goods or laden with people. That's how you get donkeys to actually to move. Carrot in front of you, you go towards the carrot, but he never catches a carrot. You are all donkeys. There is enlightenment, jhana, nimitta, right in front of you. And what do? You move forward, and nimitta moves forward. You can't quite get it. It's very close to you sometimes. Have you ever been there, the nimitta is there, and you just try and get it, and it moves away from you? Or jhana, it's almost there, and you move towards it, and it goes away from you? Or even enlightenment. Nibbana itself, sometimes you feel you're so close. You can see it 2 feet in front, and you move towards it, and it moves away from you. That's the nature of Nibbana. But there is a way of catching the carrot. The way of getting nimittas, jhanas, magapala, if you think about it, is quite easy to do. The donkey's been running for many, many years. No matter how fast that donkey runs, the carrot is always 2 foot in front of his mouth. But one day the donkey hears the great Dhamma teaching, and the donkey stops. Stops still. What happens to the carrot? It goes further away. Soon the carrot is 4 foot away from the donkey's mouth, further than it's ever been before. That's what happens when you let go. Sloth and torpor, restlessness, it gets worse than before. You think that this is not working. Nibbana is even further away. I should put forth effort. And that's when the donkey starts running again and spoils the whole process. Stand still. Don't move. Be patient. Because the carrot goes 4 foot away, further than it's ever been in your life. But then something very strange happens. The carrot starts moving towards you. And you're not doing anything, you're just sitting there, or standing there. And soon the carrot is in its usual place, 2 foot in front of you. But now the carrot's coming towards you at great speed. And soon it comes so close towards your mouth, all you need to do is open the door of your mouth, like open the door of your heart. Thank you very much. That's how donkeys catch carrots, if they're smart. They run fast and then they stop. Carrot goes away, back again, in the mouth, done. They got the carrot. And that's a very accurate story of how Magapala happens. You go chasing Magapala. So one, so one, so one, I want to be so one. And so many of you, I was told, came to this retreat, you want at least so one. Maybe jhana, or you can ask for your money back. Please know you can ask for your money back. You won't get it back, but you can always ask. And they go chasing and chasing and chasing and chasing. That's called craving, running after things. And of course you never get anything. But the Buddha told Anguttimala, stop Anguttimala. He stopped. Things went even more crazy, went further away. But then, all of the stages of enlightenment, the jhanas, nimittas, they all started coming towards Anguttimala. And he became Arahat. Now instead of grasping, we let go. And I mentioned that's a very beautiful simile, because when you first let go, it seems your mind is not as stable as it was before, when you strived. That is natural. In the same way, when I hold that glass up and put it down, if you notice, I remarked, when you first put it down, it moves more than normal. That's natural. So when you do letting go, you have to wait for a while. The mind will have more sloth and torpor, more restlessness than normal. But if you continue letting go, if you continue being still, stopping, you'll find that the glass of water gets more and more still. If you stop, long enough, the carrot starts to come towards you. And that's the only way you can catch that carrot, by stopping, being still. And the only way you can be still is to let things go. It's a beautiful way. And the effort has to be, together with mindfulness, to see where you are attaching, where you are grasping, where you are doing things. And it's always because your sense of controller, of a doer, someone in charge, always driving your car. If you're not actually driving the car, you may be what we call in the West, being back seat driver. I once went to visit my family and the monks in England. When I landed at Heathrow, I was picked up by a Sri Lankan girl. Her son was a driver. I was sitting in the passenger seat, and the Sri Lankan woman was in the back seat. And we drove from Heathrow Airport to Bromley in Kent, maybe about an hour and a half's journey. And throughout the whole journey, she was giving instructions to her son. Don't drive too fast, keep to the left, don't overtake, do this way, this is a much better way, don't go that way. She was backseat driver, control freak. Now even if you let go, you have to make sure you're not backseat driver. You let things be, you let things go. Now you're going to get to the destination sooner or later. You just sit down and shut up. As I said this afternoon, when you're going in the bus back to Colombo, don't shout at the driver. Don't ask the driver, go fast, go slow, don't do this, do that. Don't be a backseat driver. Once you're in that bus, you can sit down and totally relax. The bus will take you to the destination. You don't have to drive. That's the same thing in meditation. Once you sit down on your seat and you make your body comfortable, you don't have to do anything more. Sit down and shut up. And let go. Be peaceful. Don't do anything and see what happens. That is the best way. But it takes a lot of patience. So much patience that people don't have, which is why, okay, you can do a little bit of effort in the beginning. That doesn't really disturb the meditation too much. So it's advisable not to, but if you really want to, okay, do a little bit of effort in the beginning, just to watch the breaths and just to stop the crazy mind, just to wake yourself up. Okay, if you really want to, but the deeper you get in meditation, the more you have to let things be. The more you just have to take away this controller. And a lot of the meditation, the mindfulness, is actually seeing how you control things. How you grasp, attach, manipulate and manage your own meditation. Instead of standing back, or rather sitting like in the seat of a bus, and just letting things happen. You know, there's that wonderful sutra in the Anguttara Nikaya, where it said, and I think it started off with experiencing suffering. For one who experiences suffering, they don't need to make the decision, they don't need to think or determine, oh, may I have faith, pamojiyang. Because the faith will come, because you experience suffering. You know, this is the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha was right. And for someone who has pamujjha, they don't need to think or to will, oh may I experience piti. It comes as a natural result, dhammata. And for those who have piti, you don't need to make the decision or the choice, oh may my body be tranquil, because tranquility happens as a natural result of piti. For someone who is tranquil in body and mind, they don't need to think or to make an adhisthana, oh may I experience sukha, because sukha comes as a natural result, it's dhammata. And someone who has sukha, you don't need to resolve, to decide, to make an adhisthana, oh may I be still, experience samadhi, because stillness happens as a natural result. For someone who is still has samadhi, you don't need to decide to make a resolution, oh may I see things as they truly are, it happens as a natural result. And for those who see things as they truly are, you don't need to make a resolution, oh may, I think it goes, viraga or vimutti, I forget, but anyway, this is where the enlightenment happens afterwards, after you've seen things they truly are. The point of that very unique and brilliant sutta was to show it was a natural process. You don't have to get involved. In fact, when you do get involved, you disturb the process. The process is one of letting go and seeing that when you do let go, it actually works. And as I mentioned, to give this more textual authenticity, again, one of my favourite sutras will always be the Anattalakkhana Sutta. And I emphasise this on the retreat. Look at that, it's a brilliant sutta. Reflect on it again and again and again, because that was a sutta which created the first five arahats. And I can imagine just them hearing it and understanding it. So the five khandhas, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana, is anatta. If it was a self, it wouldn't be an affliction. If it was a self, you could actually say, oh, may my rupa khanda be like this, oh, may it be like that. But you can't do that. It's impossible. Oh, may my vedana be like this, oh, may my vedana be like that. Oh, may I always only have happiness and no pain. You can't do that, because vedana is not yours, it's not a self. It's out of control. And oh, may my perception be like this and not like that. Your perception is out of your control, it doesn't belong to you. Oh, may my sankhara be like this and my sankhara not be like that. It can't be done. Nalabhati. It is impossible. And oh, may my consciousness be like this, may my consciousness not be like that. Oh, may I be conscious of nimittas. Oh, may I be conscious of jhanas. Oh, may I be conscious of magapala. The Buddha is saying that cannot be done. These things don't belong to you. He said, let them go. And then all these things happen. Do you see your mistake? Even in meditation, we make aspirations. We want. Oh, may my vedana, my mind, my consciousness be like this and be like that. And the Buddha said, monks, you're wasting your time. It cannot be done. It cannot be done. It cannot be done. So when you understand that sutta, and you accept it, it means that what rupa is just rupa, just leave it alone. Vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana, it's just vijnana, just leave it alone. You understand the teaching to Bahya in the scene? It's just a scene, that's all. Big deal, leave it alone. In the felt, in the sense, sorry, it's not in the felt. In the scene, in the heard, in the sensed, in the cognized, it's just cognized, that's all, leave it alone. Jhanas, nimittas, magapala, leave it alone. So if you realize that, that is magapala. If you try to attain it, try to seek for it, try to run after the carrot, it never comes to you. If you let it go, give up, let go, abandon, renounce. I don't mean renouncing just your money and your possessions. I mean renouncing the whole lot. Renounce the five khandhas. Ah, to hell with these five khandhas. They're a pain in the ass. They are, aren't they? Your body. There's how much pain and difficulty it's given you. Getting colds and sickness when you're about to do a wonderful retreat. Why can I get the cold afterwards, not during the retreat? And vedana, all these pains and aches in the body. You know, the last couple of days I had a back pain. It's gone now. I never tell people if I've got a pain, because if I tell people I've got sick, I get all this medicine. They know what it's like. They all come up to you and tell you, Ajahn Brahm or Bhante, you must take this medicine. It's very, very good. And being a kaidmaka, I say, okay. And then someone else comes up, take this medicine. It's Ayurvedic. It's very good. Take this medicine. It's herbal. It's very good. Take this medicine. You know, it's chemical. It's very good. And I end up agreeing to take all this medicine. So I have to take it because I have to, you know, keep my precepts of keeping promises, and that really makes me sick. So, So as a senior monk, if I'm sick, I hide it as best I possibly could. Otherwise, you'll all give me medicines. So, this body, you know, oh, may my Vedana be like this, my Vedana, but I can't do that. Can you do that? Totally impossible. So I just, okay, Vedana, you do what you want. I'm not going to get involved with you. You can ache, you can be happy, you can have energy, you can be dull. Your problem, not mine. It doesn't belong to me. See, this is called letting go. So Vedana comes, Vedana goes, it's just Vedana, leave it alone. Sanya perceptions, perceptions of nimittas, or perceptions of demons. Not just perceptions, or if you see this incredible demon, this demon, Mara, and his whole army come to take hold of you. Not just perceptions, anyway. If Mara came and wanted to take over my mind, he can have it. I don't own it, it doesn't belong to me, it's yours. In other words, perceptions you don't cling on to, you don't own, nothing to do with you. And sankharas, look, I mentioned a chetana, but thought is one of the sankharas. What a crazy thing thought is, it doesn't belong to me. How many years have you thought, has it ever really got you anywhere? It just gives you headaches, that's all. Has it ever really got you enlightened through thinking? You know, there are people who have got much sharper minds than anyone in this room. The great philosophers who have trained in the marvellous universities, they've trained themselves how to think so powerfully and so clearly. Do they get enlightened? No way. They're a mess. I've met those people. They're a total mess. They're crazy cases. And they think so much, but they understand so little. So this thinking business, please see it for what it truly is. None of my business. It's just the mind going crazy. I've actually seen people really going crazy, going mad, and they think so much. Most of you are just moderately crazy, but you're still crazy. Think. But the Santamuni, the silent sage, poise, no thoughts, just experiencing. The thoughts that don't belong to you. So don't buy into them. They're not me, not mine, not a self, they're none of my business. You know one of the great similes of the Buddha with thinking? I should have mentioned this, but it's a great one. He said, just like a young man or a young woman, you know, fond of adornments and finery, were going out. Suppose they were going out to dinner at an expensive restaurant. They're going out to a party or a dance or a musical concert. And you're dressed up with the best clothes and jewellery and makeup and aftershave if you're a guy. And you go out there and you find actually that you've been put a garland, a necklace of dead dog carcasses around your neck. Imagine that, just dressed up to go to a big party. And you find that somehow, or you don't know how this happened, there's a necklace of carcasses of dead, rotting, stinking dogs around your neck. You'd be disgusted. You'd be upset. You'd want to throw it off as soon as possible. And in that sutta, the Buddha said, that's like putting thoughts around your beautiful citta. Your beautiful prabhasara, pure citta, your mind. When you put thoughts around it, that's comparable to putting the carcasses of dead, rotting dogs around your beautiful mind. What a wonderful simile that is. So next time you think, there's another dead stinking dog in my mind. Throw these things out. So that's why these, you know, sankhara, they don't belong to me. And how do you throw those thoughts out? They're none of my business. They're none of my business. You don't worry about them. Do you really worry about my thoughts? No, my thoughts are my thoughts. You just go away. Do you worry about this room in this hotel? When you go back to your hermitages, are you going to worry about it? How's that room today? But it doesn't belong to you. So you can forget about it. Your thoughts should be like that. Because they don't belong to me, it's none of my business, you just let them all go. Not my business. And I actually use that as a mantra. Thought comes out of my mind, none of my business. What am I going to talk about today? None of my business. What am I going to talk about when you meet the president? None of my business. What am I going to do when I leave here? None of my business. I've got no business. I'm not a business monk. So being none of my business is a beautiful thing. And then all these thoughts and plans and dreams and fantasies are none of my business. Because it's none of your business, you let it go. It's a great way of letting go. It's none of my business because there's no my in there, no me to own things. I just let them go. And then once you've let all those thoughts go, I mean, the will, I've spent a lot of time talking about this jade and this will, how it's not yours. And it's great to be able to see that. That frees you from so much burden, so much suffering. I don't have to do anything anymore. I don't have to control. You know, it's so much of a pain trying to get enlightened. You know, working so hard. You know, you're a monk now, and you know, people, especially if you're in the West, they're going to, your friends, your parents are going to ask, you know, all these years as a monk, what you've been doing, is it really worth it? You know, and all of the, even the Sinhalese monks here, you tell your friends, you went to Ajahn Brahm's retreat, what did you get? It's such a burden having to do things. So that's why that it's great not doing anything. That's what I said last night, that Samma laziness. The correct laziness. He knows correct laziness because when you really let go, things disappear. That is the sign that you've let go of craving or let go of doing. Things vanish. If they continue on, you haven't let them go yet. The body still continues, it hasn't, you haven't let go yet. Even when somebody asks, I just pass over the question very quickly of things like the bhangayana, when the body sort of disappears. It hasn't really disappeared. It's just still got its parts. Maybe sort of separated into little bits, however you look at those bits. But it hasn't vanished yet. You know you've understood the body when you can let go of it. And you're sitting here and it's none of my business. So aches and pains, just gone. When the body disappears, that's a sign you've let it go. When the thoughts disappear, that's a sign you've let them go. If they're still carrying on, you're still attached, you're still involved there somewhere. If the body is still there, you're still attached, you're still involved somewhere. If the will is still there, you're still attached, still involved somewhere. So the sign of letting go is vanishing. We are arguing Nirodha, fading away and ceasing. So this is actually what you experience. And the consciousness, oh, may my consciousness be like this. I'm just going to be conscious of my nimitta. I'm Ajahn Brahm, I can get nimittas very easily. I'm just going to be conscious of my nimitta. If I try that, it doesn't come. Why? Because I am trying to do it. I am controlling it. I've been there so many times, I know now if I want to see a nimitta, the last thing I should do is want to see a nimitta. I just become still. I let go. I disappear. I vanish. And the more I vanish, the more these nimittas come up. The more I stop trying to control, the more the jhanas happen. Not only do I get into nice meditation, but I'm also practicing the Buddha's teachings, practicing the Dhamma, reinforcing, you know, the teachings by just, when you let go, things disappear. You let go of craving, you get closer to Paramasukha, the ultimate happiness. You're just letting go of afflictions. Just like you've been carrying a backpack, or you've got your bowl and bag with so many things in it, and you've been on charika, walking, you get so tired carrying things. They just put things down. And it's such a relief to rest. Such a relief not to carry heavy burdens. To let them all go. And of course the heaviest burden, you know, is your practice. Your desire to become enlightened. What a heavy burden that is. Your aspiration to get nimittas and jhanas. That's really tough to carry around. So put all those burdens down. Don't aspire for nirvana. Don't chase the carrot. Stop. And Nibbana comes to you. I'll finish off with one last story because I'm running out of time. This was an anecdote. A story when Ajahn Chah was giving one of his talks. Now I was with Ajahn Chah. He was my teacher. I respect him and have so much gratitude towards him. But that doesn't mean I can't criticize him. Some of his talks were so boring. He would talk for about 3, 4, 5 hours. And most of it was rubbish. but you would listen because every now and again he'd have these amazing sort of truths, and it was worth waiting for 2 or 3 hours to get one of these little sentences, which, wow, that was really profound. That's why we endured so much. But now when you actually read some of his books, you know, in print, what you're actually reading there is what's been filtered. Just like when they dig gold out of the ground, most of the earth which they dig out is rubbish, and they just have to sift out, you know, maybe 1% or 0.5%, which is the real gold. And that was like Ajahn Chah's talks. And so you're very lucky when you read the books. It's all been sifted for you. For me, I had to be there enjoying it. And on this one occasion, Ajahn Chah was exerting himself in boredom, giving one of his very terrible talks, hour after hour. And there was a little samanera, one of these small novice monks, you see. And when it got to about 10, 11 o'clock, he was getting tired. And he said, look, I'm only a small monk, just a novice, maybe 13 or 14. It's all right for these adult monks to go without sleep, but I need my sleep. It's, I need this. When is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When's he going to stop? I want him to stop. And that became like an obsession for this novice for the next hour. When is Ajahn Chah going to stop? When's he going to stop? When's he going to stop? Because the little novice was so tired and bored. And then, as happens, when you are practicing the path, sometimes you just switch things around slightly. And his insight was to switch the mantra around from when is Ajahn Chah going to stop to the words, when am I going to stop? When am I going to stop? And this little novice stopped. He stopped. When he opened his eyes afterwards, it was early in the morning. I think he missed Bindavata, but he just had a wonderful time in deep meditation for the first time in his young life. He'd stopped. He hadn't heard the rest of the talk or the end of the talk, the bowing and the little chanting which they do in Thai monasteries after the talk. He hadn't heard all the monks pack up their things and leave. He was just sitting there, totally oblivious to the five senses, having the most wonderful time inside. Why? Because he understood the word. Stop. It's a beautiful little story. Even a little novice could get the jhanas that way. So, that's a great little mantra for you. When am I going to stop running after the carrot? When am I going to stop trying to control the five khandhas? Saying, oh, may my next experience be like this, may my next experience be like that. When are we going to stop? Let go of craving. If you do, you get these incredible experiences. And you understand the meaning of cutting off your hand. Stop grasping, and you're happy. You see that there is no self. So once that happens, not grasping becomes automatic, because there's nothing left to grasp. I'm not saying no object, nothing left to do the grasping. So I've given you lots and lots of seeds over these last few days, and I hope that many of them you may have understood. Most you won't, and that's par for the course. But nevertheless, the seed is in there. As I mentioned, you have been brainwashed, you have been conditioned. I'm just getting my own back for what Ajahn Chah did to me. This is just how it works. And little by little, you'll find those beautiful jhanas and the path to enlightenment. And that'll be my reward. You don't need to pay gratitude. You don't need to say thank you. The only way that gratitude is paid back is when somebody also reaches the jhana or reaches enlightenment. And as a teacher, that's one of the most wonderful times, when someone comes up to you and it's almost like with tears in their eyes, because they get so much pity sukha. Ajahn Bhama finally did something. And they talk to you and you listen to them and they're not making it up. It's real. What a wonderful thing that is for a teacher. So if you have any feelings of gratitude towards me, that is the only way you can pay it back. The only way you can worship a Buddha is by practicing the teachings. The only way you can pay gratitude to a teacher, any teacher, is following their advice. So I leave that with you. And it's been a pleasure teaching you and sharing this time with you. All things must come to an end. And now the end has come. Take care.